This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Annalee Newitz.
That's the Annalee Newitz, science journalist and science fiction author. Their most recent book is Four Lost Cities, A Secret History of the Urban Age, and their co-host of the podcast, Our Opinions Are Correct. At some point, we discovered that we were both kind of obsessed with Neanderthals, who they were, what they have to teach us. So back in January, we decided to co-host an episode on our much maligned cousins. This is a rebroadcast of that hour.
The last thing we need is a Neanderthal thinking that in the meantime, everything's fine. Take off your mask. Forget it.
We both heard it. Of course, we were both appalled.
I mean, it's just not true. There's no evidence that Neanderthals couldn't understand existential risks.
Yeah, right?
Why are Homo sapiens always insulting Neanderthals?
You may be wondering why that matters. We found that we both shared the view that to understand who you are and where you're going, you cannot go too far back. In fact, there is no back too far.
So we're going to explore the prism through which we have long viewed Neanderthals and what that says about us and how our view of them is changing and what that says about us, too.
We're going back to the Paleolithic, and it's gonna blow your mind, because it wasn't like this.
Or this.
Or this.
I really don't understand your Congress or your system of checks and balances, because I'm just a caveman. I fell in some ice and later got thawed out by scientists. But there is one thing I do know. We must do everything in our power to lower the capital gains tax. Thank you!
It was more like this.
The Neanderthals conquered challenges with cooperation. They collected pigments, red ochre and manganese dioxide, and they colored things.
That's John Hawks, an anthropology professor at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, who knows his Neanderthals.
To me, studying Neanderthals is like trying to study an alien intelligence. I don't understand the language that they might have spoken, but I can tell from the patterns that there was sophisticated behavior there.
We got started on this whole thing by talking about the word that Joe Biden used to describe people who refuse to wear masks. I say Neanderthal.
I say Neanderthal.
The difference is academic, but it also has to do with pop culture.
You wouldn't usually say that stupid congressman is a Neanderthal. You'd probably say Neanderthal. And that kind of is the popular culture versus really scientific point of view is encapsulated in that.
Hawks says there are really two versions of the Neanderthal, the one from pop culture, who exists on the Flintstones and in the mind of Joe Biden, and the one who scientists understand as an early human who has gone extinct. They're kind of our sisters and kind of our mothers. What I mean is that they share a common ancestor with Homo sapiens and, how to put this delicately, they also exchanged genetic material with our fathers. Hawks says that Africa was once teeming with different types of early humans, and all of them were interacting with each other. They were also migrating out of Africa into Europe and Asia. Homo sapiens were not the first humans to leave Africa and colonize Europe.
Neanderthals emerged as a different population from our African ancestors around 700,000 years ago. And when they first split off from those African populations, they were a population that's joined together with another group that we today know as the Denisovans. The Neanderthals ultimately lived in the western half of Eurasia, the Denisovans, we think, in the east and southeast part.
And elsewhere in the world, there was a diminutive human called Homo floresiensis, nicknamed the Hobbit people. All of them were human, with complicated social lives and art and culture. But there were also early humans that Hawkes says probably weren't like us.
Homo naledi, a species that I have been working on for the last decade in South Africa, in the Middle Pleistocene, as Neanderthals and the ancestors of modern humans in Africa were diversifying, there's this other species in South Africa, Homo floresiensis that you mentioned. Many of these groups represent deeper branches that connect earlier in our evolutionary history and are very different from us. Some of them, like Homo naledi, I would really hesitate to call human. They had brains a third the size of ours.
Our scientific understanding of who counts as human and who our closest ancestors are has changed a lot over the past half century. And this brings us back to terminology. In 1950, you'd call a human like me a hominid.
And the reason is that id is this suffix in taxonomy that means family. The great apes living today, chimpanzees, bonobos, gorillas, are our close relatives. And chimps and bonobos are our closest living relatives. So the tree of relationships doesn't separate the living great apes from us. It puts us within them. For taxonomists, what that means is that our family is a family that includes the other great apes. They're the hominids.
But in the past few decades, taxonomists have started using a new category, hominin, that is just for humans and our direct ancestors. And thus, with a change in suffix, we have a new way of separating ourselves from the apes and firmly putting us in the same tribe as Denisovans, the hobbits, small-brained Homo naledi, and yes, the Neanderthals. And given that we were all in the same tribe, it's not a surprise that a lot of, you know, love was flowing between all these groups. Or, as the scientists say, there was a lot of genetic admixing.
It's certainly true that we all belong to populations that have mixed with each other, that have mixed repeatedly, and that mixture is fundamental to our nature as a species. It's accelerating, if anything, with long-distance movement between different populations, but it was true prehistorically. One perspective that ancient DNA has given us of these skeletons from different times in the past is that we can see that, hey, the people that lived in this place 3,000 years ago weren't the same as the people that lived there earlier because there was immigration, there was mixture. And that's true at every time stage that we can observe.
So that means that most of us are a little bit Neanderthal. In fact, Brooke did a genetic test, and she was a little disappointed that she was only 2.5% Neanderthal, at most.
Hey, rub it in.
The path from hominid to hominin was pretty recent, and it's also pretty significant. Science has now acknowledged that Neanderthals, among other early hominins, were human, like us. Of course, we're still having arguments about the relative humanity of Republicans and Democrats, so, you know.
Up next, how, after more than 100 years, we came to understand what we didn't understand about Neanderthals. Like how they lived, what they ate, what they wore, and how they died.
This is On the Media.